Okay, we're going to continue now. I know there were some questions from last week. I wanted two things to clarify that got back to me. So we'll clarify. We'll do that at the end. As we did last week, try to go through some basic halachas with the understanding that it's incomplete, with the understanding that this is usually something that should be done over the course of months, every day, for an hour, instead of 2-3 hours. But to try at least to cover some of the basic shilas, I hope not to cause more confusion. It's obvious that in different homes over the years, based upon different things that you learned and that you heard in school, later on maybe in seminary, or that you saw, there are different ways of doing things. Some, mostly, I hope, are acceptable in halacha, and some perhaps need to have a little bit of an adjustment. We can go again next time in Mitzvah Shem, go through some more questions, until we all, with God's help, are doing what we're supposed to be doing in Yevi Nachas Ruach to Rabbeinu Shlomo. We're going to begin this second part of our discussion with the laws of Shehiyah. First of all, there's going to be a definition. Then we're going to go through some basic halachas. I'm not sure if tonight we're going to get to all the dinim, to get to the dinim of where we're allowed to move things on the block. We might have to do one more time, Mitzvah next month. But we'll do whatever we can, and then at the end, there'll be some time for questions. So we're going to move very quickly. So it's being recorded to go over. And if anybody has a question, either afterwards or if you think of something during the week, to give a call or like here to write down, we can do it next time. That's fine. Okay, Shehiyah. Let me explain what that means, and we'll see how that affects us on Shabbos in our kitchens. As far as Bishul is concerned, as far as cooking is concerned on Shabbos, midaraisa, that means from the Torah, there is no issur at all to leave raw food or unboiled, uncooked liquid on an open flame on Erev Shabbos, on Friday, so that it gradually cooks over the course of Shabbos. Midaraisa from the Torah, that's perfectly allowed to put something on a flame, an open flame, on Friday, and leave it cooking. The reason for that is that the bishul is taking place on its own. I'm not doing anything. I'm not cooking anything on Shabbos. I put it on Friday, and it's cooking by itself over Shabbos. Midaraisa from the Torah. There's nothing wrong with that at all. However, Chazal were concerned that a person might come to speed up the cooking process of raw food or uncooked food by, in those days, stoking the fire, causing there to be more cooking. Agitating a fire is, of course, a melacha that's forbidden from the Torah. That's called mavir, burning. That's forbidden from the Torah. So because of this concern, and keeping in mind also how ovens were in those days, we're not going to go into that. Because of that, they said that it's usur to leave uncooked foods on a fire in a normal manner. They were afraid that people would try to do something to make it go, to make it cook faster. This fear in halacha is called gzeira shema yichata, or shema yichata begechol, the fear of stoking the coals, of moving coals around to make the fire stronger, to have it cook better. They were afraid of that. The issur of doing this nowadays, which you understand is not forbidden from the Torah, it's forbidden midrabanan, which of course is serious. The issur to do such a thing, meaning to leave uncooked raw food or liquids on an open flame, cooking over Shabbos, the issur to do that is called in halacha shehiyah. Aleph. Beis. So Chazal didn't leave us without any ability to keep our food cooking over Shabbos. So in order to leave on uncooked or partially foods on the flame, Chazal made a rule that the fire must be covered. We're going to the history of the blech, right? Chazal made a rule, it's Midrabanan, again from the Torah, it's okay. Chazal made a rule that the fire must be covered. This covering of the fire eliminates the Isser Midrabanan, this rabbinic prohibition of Shihia, of leaving uncooked raw foods on an open flame, cooking on their own over Shabbos. So we cover the flame. The covering, by doing this, we are demonstrating, we're making a hecker, we're making it obvious, that the person does not want to have a stronger flame. And in effect, it's a reminder to that individual not to do anything, not to handle with the fire at all, not to increase the fire at all, to leave it as it was on Friday. In halacha, a covered flame is called ketuma. You know these words. It's called ketum. Kuf, tes, vav, mem, he. Ketuma. That's what it's called when the flame is covered. Gimel. Nowadays, the best thing to use to create this reality of a covered flame, so that we can avoid any rabbinic prohibition of leaving something uncovered, the best thing nowadays is to use a blech, which is sold in all Jewish neighborhoods, in hardware stores, and in some Judaica stores, which you all know. A relatively thin piece of metal, which covers the fire, the burners, on Shabbos. If there isn't any blech, if you happen to be someplace, away, hotel, or in someone's home that you're able to use, and you don't have a blech and it's Shabbos, then the poskim, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others say, you can simply take aluminum foil and fold it over a few times to create your own blech by making a thicker piece of foil, just fold, or heavy-duty foil, fold over some foil, and put it onto the fire. And that can act as a blech to cover the flames. It's important to know, and oftentimes when you're very, very busy on Friday, you might forget, that all the adjustments of the fire must be made before you put the blech on. You are not to put the blech on, cover the flame, and then start turning on the fire and adjusting the flame that you want. You must turn on the flame, you must make all the adjustments of the fire before you put on the blech, for the obvious reason that the whole purpose of the blech is to indicate that I'm not going to be doing anything with this fire once I have a blech on. I'm not going to be touching the fire once I have a blech. That's the whole purpose. Therefore, any adjustment that you're going to make with the flame, arranging the flame that you would like for Shabbos, how high, how low, you must do that before you put on the blech. Bidei Eved, however, if you didn't do it that way, you can right away pick up the blech a little bit. You shouldn't just do it underneath the blech. You should pick up the blech a little bit and turn on the fire. And then you put the blech down. So l'chadchila, to begin with, make all the adjustments on the stovetop before you put the blech down. But David, if you put it down, then just for a second, lift it up a little bit and turn on the fire the way that you want, or adjust it a little bit. Again, it was already on, so adjust it a little bit, turn it on, turn it off, adjust it, and then put the blech down. And after that, make sure, even though there is a disagreement among the poskim regarding this, but the conclusion of most poskim is that the controls of the stove must also be covered. Many of the blechs, as you know, are made in such a way where the metal extends and there's an extra piece that comes down over the front of the stovetop to cover the dials. If not, then you take a piece of foil or something and you cover the dials on your own. And that's called a blech. Exactly how the blech is used, we're going to be talking about throughout this discussion. But that is what the blech is. It's to prevent, to avoid any violation of the rabbinic iser of shihiyah, of an open flame being used for cooking on Shabbos. This way a person is reminded, a person is careful. Also, as other posts can point out, it does decrease the intensity of the heat by having a blech on top. We're not going to go into the differences between these two views. For our purposes, it's a reminder that I'm not to touch the flames, I'm not to do anything with these control dials over Shabbos. In modern times, an interesting invention came about called the electric hot plate. This is used much more in Eretz Yisrael, where there's a shortage of space, and other reasons why. This is used very much in Eretz Yisrael, and here also. There are two types of electric hot plates. There is the first type, which is halachically preferable. The first type of electric hot plate has no temperature dial. It only has one setting. You can't adjust it. You can't do anything to make it hotter or less. It has no temperature dial. It maintains a constant temperature. According to most poskim, this does not require a blech at all. That's a very big convenience for people. It does not, according to most poskim, does not require a blech for the simple reason that since we're not afraid of Shemi Yechata, it only has one setting, you're not going to try to make it hotter because to accelerate the cooking because you can't do that. So as a result of that, most poskim hold that you can use an electric hot plate. We didn't say how to use it. We're going to get to that afterwards. But that you can use an electric hot plate that only has this one setting, even without a blech. The second type of hot plate, which is much more common these days, is that there is a temperature dial. Once you have a temperature dial, low, medium, high, whatever, once you have a temperature dial, then we have, once again, the fear of Shema Yechata, that you might increase the heat. And because of that, if you have such a hot plate, it needs a blech, or a doubled over sheet of foil. It should be mentioned that the person who's considered by most to be the greatest living posek, Rav Yoshev, Zolga Zonzain, Rav Yoshev holds that all hot plates, regardless of whether they're dials or not, all hot plates Rav Yoshev holds must be covered with a blech. But again, that is not mainstream, that's not universally accepted, but Rav Yoshev, of course, is very, very important to know, that he holds that hot plates must always be covered with a blech or with some doubled over piece of foil. An interesting thing that should be pointed out with the hot plate, which happened this last Friday, if there's a power shortage. I had three people in shul that were rightfully concerned about this, and many more at home that were wondering about what they're going to do in the dark, and also how they're going to reconcile this problem of appliances shutting off and going back on. So the halach is that if there's a power shortage, and as a result of that, the electricity, the heat of the hot plate went out, and then the power went back on, the poskim, Rav Yoshev, Rav Shlomo Zalman, and others hold that it is okay to continue with that and to use the food, even if in the interim, not like last week, it was 10 minutes maybe, so the food was still warm. Even if there would have been a power shortage for a considerable amount of time, and the food would have already cooled down, and then the power came back on, and it got hot again, it's permissible, 100% permissible, according to the poskim, to allow the food to remain on there and to heat up, even though there was a temporary shortage, even if it cooled down during that period of time. Next, a crock pot. Another invention, not so long ago we never heard of such a thing, we never saw such a thing. It's now become very, very common in kitchens. And it created a tumult among the poskim. There were different types of crock pots in the beginning. Now, pretty much they all have inserts, right? I don't know if people use any more the kind without an insert. Almost all of them have inserts. So the crock pots that they make nowadays all have temperature dials, high, medium, low. They all have temperature dials, and therefore the laws of Shehiya apply. In other words, you have something you want to cook over Shabbos. That's considered to be an open flame. Electricity, as we learned last week, is considered to, al pi halacha, to be a flame. And if you want to keep the insert in and have this cooking over Shabbos, you need to create a situation of ketuma. Ketuma again means a blach, a covering. The way to do this is you take a piece of foil, doesn't have to be thick, any piece of aluminum foil, and you take the piece of foil, you put it inside the insert. It should be coming out a little bit over the sides so it's noticeable. Remember, that's the point. You should see that there's foil. It comes over the sides so you see it, and you put the insert, you arrange the heat before, the dial the way that you like. You have the foil inside, you create a blech, and you put the insert into the crock pot, and you cover the dial. Take a piece of foil, you tape on, or any other way that you want to, you cover the dial of the crock pot, and by doing this you have created a state of kituma, of a blech on the crock pot. Next. Again, if there are any questions, write it down, we can come back to it. Next. What about an oven? Are you allowed to leave something uncooked, something that's not finished? Are you allowed to leave it cooking in the oven over Shabbos? Is there an Isra of Shehiya with an oven? Now, an oven is different from the stovetop for the simple reason that in the oven, the food is not placed onto any fire. In our ovens, the food is not placed on any flame, not placed directly on a flame. But rather, the flame is at the back of the oven, and the food is cooked because of the heat that's circulating in the air of the oven. And that makes it different from the open fire, which Chazal were worried about, and because they were worried, they instituted the halachas of Shehiya and Ketuma to make a blech. So what about an oven? You're not putting anything on a fire in the oven. So the poskim discuss whether or not you need to create a blach at all. Do you need to create a blach? Perhaps not. And the poskim discuss how can you create a ketumah? How do we create some sort of a blach to remind us not to increase the oven heat? What do we do? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, even though we all love Rav Moshe, this psak of Rav Moshe would not make him popular with the housewives. Rav Moshe held that ovens require a complete ketumah, which means an insert, a box. All sides have to be covered, according to Rav Moshe. He held that the tanur, our ovens, have a din of Eish, and needs to be covered. Therefore, you have to insert, according to Rav Moshe, a barrier, a box that will act as a barrier on all sides. Most poskim disagree with Rav Moshe, and it's not the common practice. Another great living posek, Yibor Mechaim L'chaim, Rav Vosner, the Shevet HaLevi in Bnei Brak. Rav Vosner holds that it's enough to cover one of the walls, or to put a piece of foil on the floor, the surface of the oven. I know you're all thinking, I don't do that either. Okay, so hold on. That's where Rav Vosner holds. But remember, the whole Isra of Shehiya is when you have foods that are uncooked or partially cooked. We're not going to get into the whole discussion of how cooked they are. The whole problem of Shehiya is when something has not been cooked and I might want to accelerate the process of cooking. And as I told you last week, every frum housewife should see to it that everything is fully cooked before Shabbos. you avoid many problems, including this one, including the question of, do I need to have an insert in the oven? Do I need to have a foil, some type of ketumah in the oven? You only need to have that if you're dealing with foods that are partially cooked or they're raw. Because then there's a gzeira, shem yichata, I might do something. If, however, the food is fully cooked, I'm in effect avoiding the need for ketumah. And lemaisa, if you ask your mothers, or there's some younger chevre here, grandmothers, especially if you ask those who remember what it was like in Europe, my father was the youngest in his family, and it was his responsibility every Friday to carry his mother's cholent over to the bakery. There were the different bakeries in town had big ovens that resembled like they have in pizza shops now or catering halls, these big ovens. And the families had spots. In some places they paid a small amount for a rental. And everybody had their oven in their bakery for generations sometimes. And you had a little simmon on your pot. My father said there were often fights breaking out because someone was invading someone else's spot because of a simcha and they needed a second spot. And you had to get there early enough and vie for your place in the community oven. There were no blechs, there were no inserts, there were no boxes, there were no pieces of foil. They didn't have foil. There was nothing like that in those ovens. The reason is those cholents were fully cooked and finished. Nobody would dare bring an uncooked cholent to the oven. It was yadua. It was known by all of the housewives that the cholent had to be finished, had to be cooked. And because of that, that was the common tradition to be makel and to leave fully cooked food such as cholent in an oven on Erev Shabbos on Friday without any covering inside or out, not on the inside, not on any dials, but to leave it inside the oven without a problem. Because there's no contact with any fire, and that has always been the custom as long as the food is fully cooked, that has to be emphasized over and over. Then it does not require, a ketumah does not require a blech. If a person is in a situation where no blech is available, and there's no foil, then if we're dealing with a fully cooked food you can put on an uncovered fire on Erev Shabbos, there's no gzeir. There's no law midrabanan shem yichata that you might want to cook it more. It's fully cooked. You can leave it heating. And obviously, we don't do this in our homes. But if you get stuck somewhere and you don't have a blech and there's no way to cover it up, you can leave a fully cooked food or liquid on a fire cooking into Shabbos. But you must remember that when you do that, although it's very rare that would happen to us, if you do that, once you take the pot off the fire, you cannot return it to the fire. That's called chazara. We're going to be talking about that in a minute. Chazara is never permitted. Returning something to a fire is never permitted to an open fire, only where there's a blech. So you can leave something on Friday, if you're stuck without a blech, on a flame. But once you take it off, gemarna, you cannot put it back on. You're finished because of the Isra of Chazar that we'll talk about in a second. Now, it's important to note here regarding the use of ovens. Our ovens nowadays have thermostats. And because of that, when you open the oven door, you allow cold air, you allow the air from the kitchen, from the room, to go into the oven. And that causes an increase in the heat of the oven. it could be to ignite the oven again. This has caused also a major debate between our poskim what to do about this. So there are many poskim who hold that if you have your food in the oven which is perfectly fine. It's fully cooked food in the oven. We don't need any covering, any blech, any foil. And now it's time to eat on Friday night, and you want to open the oven door. So many poskim hold that the only way that you're allowed to open the oven door is if the fire is on. If that could be determined, sometimes you have a broiler on the bottom. There's a drawer. And you can open up underneath, and you can see if the fire is on. Or if there's another way to see whether the fire is going, or to hear if the fire is going. These poskim say, otherwise, you're not allowed to open the door. Many ovens now have Shabbos clocks or settings, timers. Well, you could put it on a timer so that you figure out by the time the chevra get back from shul, it should be off, and then there's no problem. If there is a fire and it's burning over Shabbos, these poskim say you cannot open the door. You cannot open the door if there is no fire burning, because by opening the door that could ignite the fire. However, Rav Moshe is Meikel. And there are other poskim who are Meikel, who are lenient, and hold that you can open the oven door, b'shas hatzarich, you can open the door anytime. And the reason for this is, Rav Moshe explains, that this is a groma bedover she'ena miskavein, meaning, I have no intention to make the fire go on. I don't want that, I'm not interested in that. Also, I'm not directly turning on a fire or a dial. I'm only opening a door which will allow the air in, which will potentially increase the fire. That's already a chagadya, right? It's not direct. It's a grum. So Rav Moshe held that in this case, where we're dealing with a grumma, bedover she'ena miskaven, indirectly increasing the heat, and I have no intention to make that happen. I don't think about that. I don't care about that. In addition, it's not guaranteed, Rav Moshe said, that the fire will in fact go on when you open the door. It's not batuach. It doesn't always happen. It's what's called a sofek psik resha. It might go on, it might not go on. So Moshe held that in with the combination of these factors, groma, bedover she'ena miskaven, and a sofek psik resha, that you're allowed to open the oven door anytime. Lemaisa, what do frum households do? It's kedai to be strict, because really there is quite a significant school of poskim who are strict. It's kedai to be strict and to only open the oven door, either use a timer that it's the fire is off, or to only open the oven door when the fire is already burning. However, if there's a pressing need, if the company, older parents, grandparents, whatever, and it's not the kind of thing that you want to delay. So certainly, there's no question that Rav Moshe Feinstein had very broad shoulders, and one can rely upon Rav Moshe. As a rule, one should be strict. It's kedai to use the timer, to have it go off before shul's finished. And if not, if you can, again, not to create undue pressure with the family, and if it's going to do that, then you don't have to wait, and you could rely on Rav Moshe, and you could open the oven door. Adkan Shihiya. That's our discussion of Shihiya. Now let's talk about Chazara, which we mentioned a moment ago. Let me give a little bit of an introduction to Chazara. Of course, Chazara means returning, to return something. Now we learned also that if there's liquid that's already been cooked, it's already been boiled and cooked, or if there's food, solid foods, that have already been cooked, we learned there's a klal, a rule, a principle in halacha, ein bishul achar bishul. Once something is cooked in halacha, from the Torah there's no such thing as cooking it a second time. It's already cooked. Ein bishul achar bishul. It would follow that it would be mutter to put a fully cooked food. Now remember, we're all trying to make sure we have fully cooked foods and liquids. Everything is soups. Everything is fully cooked before Shabbos. Always do that. So it would follow that I would be allowed to take a fully cooked food and put it back on the stove after I've taken the pot off the stove or out of the oven. It would make sense. since the food is already cooked, I would be allowed to put it back onto the blech, or back into the oven. It would make sense. However, Chazal were concerned here as well. Chazal were concerned that this appears, it looks like, an act of cooking. Mechzeh kimevashel. In the terminology of the Gemara, it looks like an act of cooking. And since most people are not educated in the laws of Shabbos, Chazal were very concerned that but something that looks like cooking, it's mechzeh kimevashel, that I'm taking something and I'm taking it away from a fridge or from a table and I'm putting it onto a blach. Mechzeh kimevashel. Chazal were concerned that people would begin to take liberties. So they made a rule that a pot may not be returned to the stove unless it is clear that this is not a new act of cooking, but rather a continuation of the original act of cooking. Again, Chazal made a rule that you cannot return a pot, chazar, you cannot return a pot to the stove. Yes, fully cooked. You cannot return it once you take it off to the fire, unless it is clear that this is not a new act of cooking, but rather a continuation of the original Erev Shabbos act of cooking. So, Chazal, in order to do this, Chazal made it usher to return the pot unless a number of conditions are fulfilled. Obviously, we can do this. We have ways of returning the pot. But only if you keep the following conditions. There are four conditions. Let me first name them, and then we'll talk about each one for a minute or two. One, the first condition, if you want to return the pot that was taken off the blach, you want to put it back on the blach. The pot is removed with the intention of returning it. Not an afterthought. The pot is removed, and when I take it off, my intention is to put it back on. That's one. Again, I'll talk about that in a minute. Two. While it's off the stove, it's continuously being held by the person. Well, the food's being dished out, being served, or being put into a serving dish. It's held by the person. I'll explain that in a minute. That's the second condition. Third condition. Chazara, as I said 5 minutes ago, returning something to a flame, to a stove, is only when the stove is kituma, where there's a blech, where it's covered. That's why in an oven we don't do that, as I said, because we don't put any boxes or foils in our ovens. But on the stovetop we do. So chazara, returning a pot, the third condition is that it must be kituma. There must be a blech. You never return a pot to an open fire. Even if it's a cooked food or a pot of soup that was already boiled and cooked, you never return it to an open fire. Only to a ketuma where there's a blech, where there's a covering. The fourth condition, the food must be fully cooked and still warm. It does not have to be Yad Soledes. It does not have to be 110 degrees Fahrenheit. But it has to still be warm. In order to perform chazara, in order to return something to the stove, to the blech, it has to still be warm. So even if I'm holding it for such a long time that it's already cooled down, it's not warm. It doesn't have to be hot, but it has to be warm. If it's not warm anymore, warm meaning something a little bit more than would be just stam room temperature, if it's not at all warm, then I would not be allowed to return it. And any violation of these four conditions would be the isser of chazar. Now let's talk about each one for a minute. The first one is that you have to have the intention to return the pot to the stove. L'chadchila, that means that there must be a positive intention. You don't have to announce it, hinei nimuch nimzumen. But you have to have in your mind an intention to return it to return the pot while it's still warm. You have to have that in mind. If it was removed without any thought at all, you're not thinking about anything. Or if you removed it with the intention not to return it, I'm taking it, I'm serving it, I'm done. I don't have to put this back on. Either no thought at all or anti-returning. I'm not returning it. It's awesome. Then chazar is forbidden. Then it's forbidden to return it. However, the post can say an interesting thing. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to go into the lumdis, into the learning of it. However, if, let's say by mistake, a person removed removed the pot of cholent from the blech without the intention to put it back, but it was a mistake. She didn't know that this was the cholent. She thought that it was something else. Which she would not have to keep on the blech overnight. She thought it was something else. Then the poskim say, in the case of a mistake, it is permitted for the person to return this cholent, to put it right back, to put it immediately back onto the stove. You do that the second that you realize the mistake. Not all the poskim agree, but that's the consensus of the poskim. If you made a mistake and you took it off thinking it was something else, you can return it, but you should do that immediately. It can be returned to the blech. Also, if one of the flames under a pot went out, it's not uncommon. If one of the flames under the blech, if the flame went out, it is mutter, it is permitted to move the pot either to another flame. We're going to talk more about moving things on the blech at the end. Either to move it to another part of the blech or to move it to somebody else's blech, a next door neighbor's blech. Or if you have another stovetop of the blech, it's permitted for you to do that as long as everything has a blech on it and the food is still warm. Remember, only fully cooked we're talking about. Fully cooked food, it's still warm, and he was, oy vey, you see that the fire went out under the blech. You can move it to the side, to another, if there's another fire, another burner under the blech, or you can move it to somebody else's blech, as long as it's still warm and we're dealing with fully cooked food. If the food has cooled down, then it is usher to transfer it. If the food has completely cooled down, then it's usher to transfer. Let me just mention something here, agav, in parentheses, because many people don't realize this, that as the flame blows out and there's a smell of gas, if you have a problem like that, then you are allowed to and you should turn off the gas with a shinui. Just do it with the other hand or in a different way. You shouldn't leave the gas on. That happens many times, that the fire will go out and there's still gas going. That's not safe. You should turn off the gas with a shinui. If a pot slipped off the blech by accident or out of your hands a little bit by accident, then it still can be returned. It's not a problem. So let's talk about this second condition, the condition of the pot still being in your hand. That sounds pretty uncomfortable. It can work out very easily if you have people in the house to help you. One person holds and the other person takes out the food. Now the poskim disagree as to the extent to which one must hold the pot. There are those who say that it could be rested on the edge of the counter with you leaning against it in such a way that if you would move away or let go, it would fall. In other words, it still needs you. So you're still attached to the pot. You're not just putting it down and letting go of it. By holding it, even though it's on the edge of the counter and you're leaning against it, you're indicating that your intention is to return it to the stove. There are many poskim who say that that's fine. Then there are other poskim who say that even if you leave it on the counter and you're not leaning against it, and it's squarely on the counter, as long as you keep your hand on it, as long as you're still touching it, it's okay. Also, it indicates that this is not a regular situation and your intention is you're going to take something out, but you're going to put back the pot onto the stove. It's better to be machmir, it's better to be strict, and to use the first way of either holding it and other people, if they can, to help you and take out, or to lean against it, And if for some reason that's hard for you or it's inconvenient or you're afraid, then you can keep it on the counter with your hand on it. Beis. If the pot was removed and you had the right kavana, your intention was to put it back onto the blech, but you took your hands off it completely. In other words, you're not leaning against it, you're not touching it, you let go completely. Is there anything that can be done? Can this situation be salvaged? You want to return this to the blech. So then it depends. If it was placed on a table or a kitchen counter, it's absolutely usur to be machzir this, to return it to the blech. The kitchen counter and the table are places where these things will usually have their final stop. That's where they sit. And you had no, in this case, even though, remember, even though you had kavana to put it back, but whoops, you didn't keep your hand on it. You let go of it. If you put it onto the counter or onto the kitchen table, then it's usher to put it back onto the blech. If you put it on a chair, a bench, or some or the floor, something else, not on the kitchen table or the counter. In other words, you put it on something which is not the usual resting place, on a bench, on a chair. So then there are many poskim who are makel that also is an indication, a physical indication, that you haven't let go of this and you would be allowed to put it back onto the blech. But if you put it onto the counter, onto the kitchen, even with the best intentions to put it back on the blech, if you put it onto the table or the kitchen counter and you're not holding it, you're not touching it at all, then the din is that you cannot put it back on the blech. I'll mention here that there is some question regarding the floor, and it's not recommended for different reasons to do that on the floor. And if you're in a situation where you don't have enough people to help, and for whatever reason it's hard for you to do that, then you should try to put it on a chair and not to put it on the floor. The third condition is, in order to do chazara, in order to return the pot to the blech, the third condition is you need to have the covered flame. You need to have a blech. It has to be a ketumah. Now, we've already learned that chazara does not mean that you must put the pot back on the original blech. You could put it on a different blech or your neighbor's blech. That doesn't have to be on the original blech where this was cooked. You can transfer from one blech to another. We already learned that a hot plate, if it has one setting, has a din of ketumah. And therefore you can be machzir. You could put onto the hot plate, if there's only one setting. You could put back onto the hot plate. You could do chazor on a hot plate also, without any blech. That's fine. But that type of a hot plate. If there are multiple settings on a hot plate, I'm just reviewing, if there are multiple settings on the hot plate, then even as far as chazor is concerned, returning something to a hot plate, if there are multiple settings, it must have a blech, it must be covered with a blech or a double foil. And the final condition to remember over here that is not generally placed in the list of the original conditions, but it's still necessary, is that chazara is only permitted in the original kli. What does that mean? You could transfer pots from one blech to another, but you are not allowed to take food, the pot, off of the blech, pour it into something else, and then take the second new kli that you poured it into, and then to do chazara with that. That you cannot do. It looks like a new act of cooking. You're only allowed to do chazara by returning the original pot that was cooking before Shabbos, that was fully cooked. That original pot can be returned. You cannot pour it into a new pot. As far as chazara into an oven is concerned, I mentioned it before. There's a machlokas haposkim, whether or not chazara into an oven is permitted, even if all the conditions are met. The Minchas Yitzchak Rav Weiss, the great Rav of Yerushalayim, Alav Shalom, and Rav Moshe Feinstein held that it's usur to do chazara in an oven. You cannot do chazara in an oven, even if all the conditions are met. Even if there's an insert, if there's foil, even if you're holding the pot, you don't let go. Rav Moshe and the Minchas Yitzchak held that chazara, once you take the pot, once you take the food out of the oven, you don't put it back in the oven. Rav Moshe held there's no chazara when it comes to our ovens, because it's mechzei kemevashel. Even if you have something there and you kept all the conditions, it looks too much like you're cooking something. It's mechzei kemevashel. Others hold that no. As long as the conditions are met, these conditions that we just learned, as long as all these conditions are met, it's no different than a stovetop. As long as the conditions are met, other poskim hold that it's no different than a stovetop. But remember, then you have to have a ketumah inside. You would have to at least have foil on the surface of the oven. If you take the food out of the oven and all of the conditions are met, you can take that food out of the oven and do chazara where? Onto the blech. That's not a problem. We're only talking about Rav Moshe and the Minchas Yitzchak are only talking about taking the food out of the oven and returning it to the oven. There we have a machlokas. Some say no, others say yes, with the conditions being met. But there's no problem at all to take the food out of the oven, and of course while it's still warm, to put it onto the blech. That's fine. Keeping all the conditions. You're still holding it, you put it onto the blech, it's fine. Now we're going to try to chop over the next 10-15 minutes, I might have to go a drop over 9:30, to talk about the dinim of the blech, of how to move things, and where you can move things, and where you can't move things on the blech. It's not a free-for-all once you have a blech. It's not particularly complicated. It follows some very basic logic, and it's just a matter of visualizing. I know that it was suggested that I do a little show and tell, and my wife agreed that that would be the proper way to do it. Sorry, I don't know. I can't overcome. It was never my style to do that. I know that it's an effective way of teaching. Even when I was a teacher, I would rarely use the blackboard. I had one of my boys as the blackboard person, and I would have him get up there and write things, but I just have a problem with that. But it's really not complicated. It doesn't need to have a physical demonstration. I don't have burners here to start making a stove. It's relatively easy. Depending upon the number of flames that are lit, one could divide the blech into three areas. This makes it very simple. Always think of it in terms of area A, B, and C. You don't have to take a marker and do that on your blech. If you'd like to, it's okay. But just keep in mind that there's an A, B, and C on your blech. And let's identify each area, and then we're just going to use the letters A, B, and C, and it's nothing. It's very simple. Area A means directly over the fire, super hot, directly over the fire. That's called area A. Over the fire or very, very close to the fire, burning hot. That's called area A. Area B is an area on the blech that if you would touch it, you would right away take your finger off of that because it's Yatzel Edespel. We'll just use the number 110 Fahrenheit. It is hot, and you can't keep your hand on there. But it's not really enough. It's not hot enough to heat the contents of the pot to Yad Saledes Bo. You understand? The blech itself would be hot to your touch. But it would not be the place to cook something. If you wanted to cook it up to a Yad Saledes Bo, that wouldn't work. Maybe it would have to be for hours and hours, but it wouldn't really work. But you would feel it as something which is hot. Again, it's not burning. It's not over. It's not area A over the fire. It's on the side. It's area B. It's hot to the touch. It's Yad Saledes Bo. But it's not a place really for cooking. And the contents of the pot would not likely reach that temperature of Yad Saledes Bo. That's area B. Area C is an area that's warm. Pretty much any place is going to be somewhat warm. It's area that is warm, but it's not Yad Saledes Bo. You could put your hand on it. It's warm, but you could put your hand on it. It's not Yad Saledes Bo. That's area C. So from the highest A, directly on fire, or mamish next to that area of the fire, that really can cook the Yad Saledes Bo. It's a place of cooking. To B, which you really can't cook over there, but the area if you touch it is Yad Saledes Bo. And C, where it's just warm, and you really couldn't do anything there, other than maybe just keeping some warmth. These are the three areas. Obviously, if all the burners are on, then you have no area C, right? I think that's obvious. If you have four burners going and you have a blech, then there's not going to be any area C. It's going to be the whole place is going to be hot. It's going to either be A or B, right? Right over the four will be A, and the outside will be B, but you're not going to have a C if all four burners are burning. It's going to be hot, the whole thing. Then you only have A and B. But usually, if you have one burner going, or even two, you will have an A, B, and C. Okay, so let's talk about the rules. Now we've identified, and I hope this is clear, A, B, and C. Now, the rule of moving pots on the blech. We'll go quickly. On Shabbos, you're allowed to move a pot from A to B. You're allowed to move it from directly over the fire, that part of the blech. You're allowed to move it from A to the hot part of the blech. It's still hot, still the Yad Saledes Bo, still hot on the blech. You're allowed to move from A to B. If you want to move something from A to B and later return it to A, to return it back to A, all of this is taking place on the blech. We're not talking about chazar, on the blech. Right? If you want to move from A to B and later return it to A, you should lechatchila have that in mind when you're doing that. You should have in mind that if you're moving something from A to B, when you're moving this, that your intention is that after you do that, you're going to put it back over the flame, back to area A. You should do that. If you didn't, it's still acceptable. You could still eat that food. But you should have that in mind. That's number one situation. Next. Even if a pot started off by area B, that's where it was. It wasn't right on the fire. You were worried about it getting boiled up, getting burnt. So, again, everything here is cooked, right? Hopefully it's cooked, as a rule, to make things easier. So, if you want to move now, right, you started off on B, that's where it started, on Friday, on B. The din is that it can be moved to A on Shabbos. You can move it from area B to area A on Shabbos. Next, it is absolutely usur to move something from area C to either A or B. You are not allowed to move something from that area that's just warm, that you could even put your hand on, from that area C, the lowest, just warm area, you cannot move anything. It's also to move anything from C to A or to B. You cannot do that. So if you already moved something from either A or B to C, that's it, you're done. You're not going back to A or B. Once it's on C, you're finished. It can't go back to A or B. This is all with food that's fully cooked. If the food was only partially cooked, without getting into all the cheshbonos of how much, if the food was not, was only partially cooked before Shabbos, it can never be moved on the blech directly to A. You can never move partially cooked food from B to A. Only cooked food can be moved from area B to A. Obviously, if it's partially cooked and you move it from B to A, that would speed up the cooking. You can't do that. There are quite a few poskim who are only comfortable with moving pots around mamish in the area of A. There are those who are strict. That's why you might see it in a sefer. You might see it in a book. There are some poskim, especially some of the chassidish poskim, that said you should try to keep the pots in the area of A, not to mamish go over to B, to keep things in the area of A when you move them back and forth. But again, it's perfectly fine to go from B to A, A to B, B to A. With C, you're allowed to go to C, but once you go, then there's no return. Then you're doomed to a life in the area, in the C area. That's it. But try always to have fully cooked food. Just another 2 minutes on this. Lechatchila. No food can be first placed on a blech on Shabbos itself, since it's mechzikim avashel. You would like to take something out from the fridge, something that was not there on Friday. You have a blech, the blech is set up nice, you want to take something out from the fridge, and you'd like to put it onto the blech. Lechatchila, this is a problem of mechzikim avashel. What could look more like a new act of cooking than taking something out of your fridge and putting it onto the blech? That's mechzikim avashel. Right? You have to have a blech set up, and the chatchila, whatever you want to keep warm on Shabbos, has to be on the blech Friday and stay on the blech. Now, everybody here knows that there's an eitzah, Baruch Hashem. There's an eitzah. First of all, according to some poskim, it's mutter to take a challah on Shabbos and to put it onto area B or C. Just make sure that the frost, if you're taking it from the freezer, that there's no frost. You leave it out for a few minutes until there's no frost on it. These poskim hold that you are allowed to take the challah and to put it directly on area B or C. This is not the normal way of baking, and therefore, this is, of course, fully baked. And it's not the normal way of baking. And the poskim say that as long as you make sure that there's no frost on it, and you could take that challah and you could put it onto area C or to area B. That's Aleph. Beis, according to some poskim, there's a greater kula, there's a greater leniency with a hot plate more than a blech. This is another reason why many people have chosen to use hot plates. And there are many poskim who say, listen carefully, again, just another 5 minutes, I'm sorry, a little bit over, but we could finish in 5 minutes. Many poskim say that you can be makel with a hot plate and you're allowed to take a solid, cooked food out of the fridge, cold. Solid, cooked, no liquids. Solid, cooked food, and you could put it on the hot plate on Shabbos. If the hot plate, this is only if you have a hot plate, like many of them are in Eretz Yisrael, that has a single setting. In the case of a hot plate with a single setting, many poskim are makel, that you could take something, you could take a cold solid straight from the fridge and to put it onto this single setting hot plate. Still, lechatchila, Rav Yoshev and others were not comfortable with this, and what you should do, it's preferable to invert a plate, to put a plate or a foil pan on top of the hot plate, and to take the food out of the fridge, the solid cooked food out of the fridge, a kugel, a piece of chicken, whatever, and to put it on top of that inverted plate that's on top of the hot plate. This applies to stovetops as well, meaning it is mutter to take a cold, solid food from the fridge. Even if it has, like a piece of chicken, does have, of course, some oil on it. A kugel, with God's help, has some oil in it. I know there are some that have steeped to such low things like keeping oil out of kugel. But if you're truly Jewish, then it's saturated with oil. So there is obviously some liquid, something there. We're not talking that there isn't any liquid, but it's not with gravy, sitting in gravy. It might have something on it, but it's not sitting in gravy. It is permitted to take fully cooked, solid food out of the fridge on Shabbos and to put it on top of another pot that has in it fully cooked food or fully cooked liquid. You could put it on top of another pot that's on the blech. You could take it straight from the fridge and put it on top of a pot that's on the blech. The leniency is because this is not derech bishul. This is not the way that anybody cooks, and it's obvious. Also, a person can take an inverted pot or an inverted foil pan on the blech, put that on the blech, and to put this cold, solid, cooked food on top of the inverted foil pan. I'm not getting to the issue, by the way, of the new blechs that came out that had already, that have two layers. You know what I'm talking about? I don't even know if they sell them anymore. With water inside. It's very, very questionable. The point here is that it should not be. It should not appear to be a way of cooking. I'm not going into the problem of that. It is recommended that you not use those newfangled blechs at all. There are very big problems with them. From the beginning, even when they said that it comes with rabbinic endorsements, you might have noticed there wasn't the name of any rabbi in any of the boxes. It just said rabbinic endorsements. There are major problems with that, and don't get involved. You could use you could use something that has in it food that's cooking, or an inverted foil pan, and you could put from the fridge cold, solid food onto this. Also, you're allowed to take fully cooked dry food out of the fridge. You could put it in the winter when the radiator is going, when the heat is going on. It's not derech bishul. You could put it onto the radiator also. That's not a problem. And finally, the last thing we're going to talk about now, which is from Amish for 2 minutes, but it's very common. And again, I know there are things that I didn't cover. As I said, Mitzvah will make another time to do other things that need to be covered. The issue of adding water to cholent. Many times it happens that the cholent is burning, and this could ruin the shalom bayis. Who knows what could happen from this? So, the issue of adding water to cholent is a very big subject in halacha. First of all, it can be done, but these are the conditions. The water that's being added is water that was already boiled before Shabbos. It's fully cooked water. The cholent is fully cooked. That's aleph. The water has already been boiled, and the cholent has already been cooked. Aleph. Beis. The water must be added directly from a kli rishon. Here you can be lenient to use a ladle if you want, but it must be added from a kli rishon, from an original. Let's say the hot water pump or the kettle to pour directly from the kli rishon into the cholent. Not with a kli sheni, without going into it right now, there's no time. That would be an issue of chazara. I'm not going into that. You take the kli rishon, either you carry the cholent pot, you keep your hands on it, obviously someone hopefully can help you, or you lean against it, and you put it and you pour boiling water from the urn or from the hot water pump. You pump into the cholent. You can even do this while the cholent is on the blech, or if it's on a hot plate with one setting. You can pour also from the kettle, from the Kli Rishon, into the cholent. You must remember also to pour slowly, not gushing. Because if it's gushing, then it could be an issue of magus, of like stirring. If it's with a violent gush of water, then it creates too much of a tumult in the pot. Therefore, you should pour from the Kli Rishon slowly, directly into the cholent that's on the blech. If it's not on the blech, you take it over. Let's say you have one of those urns or a pump. Then you carry with the intention to return it, right, with all the dinim of chazara. You carry it over to the hot water pump, and you pour the water directly from the pump, not first into a cup. The cups are cliché. You go directly from the pump or directly from the urn into the cholent with the intention to return it, and holding on to it, or have somebody else hold on to it. And that's how you are able to add water to the cholent. If we have a problem that the cholent the other way, what if the cholent is too watery? Then remember, you can move it from area B to area A, as long as the cholent is fully cooked. You're allowed to move it from area B to area A on the blech to cause it to get more cooked because it was too watery. You're allowed to do that. Let me mention now, just to return from something from last week, because I know that there were maybe one or two or more of the women that had, there were some questions at the end, and also somebody, one of the boys from the shul said that I think that his mother might have asked somebody and it wasn't clear, so I want to make it clear. First of all, there was at the end we were discussing instant oatmeal, and it created quite a stir. We weren't talking about that anymore, but it did create a stir when I said that there really isn't a problem with this because it's already cooked. But the reason that there could be a problem, and I was too quick in saying that, is because even though as far as Bishul is concerned, it's not really an issue. As far as Bishul is concerned, what we were saying was right. But Chana last week raised the other problem of it creating a thick batter. And which I said, that could be a problem, if you recall at the end, it might be a problem of Lisha, of it being a thick batter. So I looked into that, and in fact, the poskim say that one should preferably not do that with the instant oatmeal, even if there's no issue of bishul, of cooking, because usually the way the oatmeals are made is that it would be a thick batter. There are some poskim who said, well, if you want to make something for the children, the instant cereals with the children, just make sure you add enough water that it becomes very thin. And therefore, one could rely on that if it's very thin. But as a rule, it's better not to do that, not because of bishul, but because of the problem of it being a thick batter, like Chana raised last week. It might be too thick. That could be a problem. This was something that somebody asked. I, as I said last week before we started, I'm not going into all different opinions all the time, only the most prevalent opinion and what is commonly done. So I mentioned last week that if you take a Kli Rishon off of the fire, even the Kli Rishon is Eino Al Ha'esh, you take a Kli Rishon that's not on the fire, that you should not stir it, even when it's not on the fire. So I was asked during the week, but Rav Moshe, it's true. I did not mention it last week, but Rav Moshe is mekil b'shas atzayrach. Rav Moshe is lenient b'shas atzayrach. Also, what I should have mentioned last week, and I just forgot to, is that even though you're not allowed, even though you shouldn't stir the pot, I'm not even talking about when it's on the block, but even the Kli Rishon, which is not on the fire, you should not l'chadchila stir. Again, Rav Moshe says b'shas atchaket, are you allowed to? But As far as the guk that's on top, I don't know the scientific term for that, but sometimes you have guk on top that's congealed, whatever, on top, so that you're allowed to move over into the rest of the food, to move that over into the rest of the food when the Kli Rishon is off of the fire. So I did not say that clearly, and there are probably some other things that were not clear, I have a card here with some questions.